The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Nice to have you with me here on The Doctor Is In.
You have always been a voice of reason through all of this.
Appreciate your time, what you're doing for America.
I give you advice, and it doesn't work at all.
You are definitely not inept by any means.
I like to hear women say that about me.
Whatever advice you're going to send my way, I am 100% taking it.
I can't tell you what to do. I will not tell you what to do.
Okay. Well, thanks.
That wasn't the answer I wanted.
Are you kidding me?
Great stuff, Dr. Ray. I'm glad I called.
I've scheduled my day around listening to your radio show.
You don't have to laugh so hard.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Well, I'm kind of sky high right now. This morning, I had a meeting with my financial advisor, and he told me that at this point, through my investments and what I've saved up, I have enough money to last me the rest of my life. Unless I want to buy something. So one step at a time. Nice to have you with me here on The Doctor Is In, Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. My website's drray.com, D-R-R-A-Y.com. All 18 books are there if you're interested in them, and there's their summaries. Instagram account and Facebook account. I appreciate the company on all those places. My son runs my Instagram, and a dear friend runs the Facebook, Katie. But the Instagram thing, you can only go 30 to 45 seconds and given some kind of a piece of life advice or guidance or insight. Hopefully it's an insight. So hopefully my wife says, Ray, if you want something you think that might help somebody, then go do it, whether you have your innate aversion to social media or not. My wife is typically smarter than I am about all kinds of stuff. One of her worst moves is she married me, but she's gotten over that. She's gotten over it. This is Look Back Friday. Got calls up there that were from previous programs, and the caller brought up matters that we couldn't address at the time. One, two, three, four, however many. And I usually pick one of them and comment in more detail about them on a future Look Back show, and that will happen after this monologue. I don't deserve that. Have you ever said that? Have you ever heard somebody say it? I didn't deserve that. It's an interesting comment, isn't it? I think people are saying, I didn't do anything that would reasonably deserve that. Or maybe they're saying that person was wrong in acting that way toward me, as I see it. Maybe they're saying that person isn't being fair. But to say I didn't deserve that has a self component to it that is unbecoming a Christian. Maybe you, in a strict sense, didn't deserve it. You didn't do anything to stimulate it, to call it down upon yourself. You didn't do that. And you don't treat them that way. And you expected more from someone who says they love you. Or from someone who says they're a Christian. But to say I, that big I is in there, didn't deserve that is saying you shouldn't do that to me. Who says? Dr. A, what they did was wrong. Well, I'm not arguing that. And I'm not arguing that it wasn't mean, or that it wasn't a put-down, or critical, or ugly. I'm not arguing any of that. It could have been all those things. But to say, I don't deserve that, what are you saying about yourself? Nobody should mistreat me? That's not what I'm saying, Dr. Ray. I'm saying that that person shouldn't have done that. And I agree with you. Perhaps they shouldn't. But to then say, I don't deserve that, that's hard to say if you say you're a follower of Christ. He didn't deserve the way he was treated. He didn't deserve the scorn that he got during his 3+ years. And then he certainly didn't deserve tortured crucifixion. He didn't deserve any of that. Did Christ, that we know of, ever say, I don't deserve this. I'm the Son of God. How could you do this to the Son of God? He never did. At least the scripture doesn't report it. Chances are he didn't say it. Well, of all people, he didn't deserve it. He didn't do anything to deserve it. They thought he deserved it because things he said. They didn't agree with things he said. Or things he did, even. They didn't agree with things he did. Healing on the Sabbath, what's he doing? So, when we say, I didn't deserve that, I don't deserve that, there's really a self component there. You shouldn't act or say that toward me. Well, but they did. But they shouldn't. Well, yeah, but they're human, and they're capable of all kinds of sinful conduct. And some of that sinful conduct may be directed right at you. It's one thing to say, I don't like what they did. It's one thing to say, I wish they wouldn't have done that. You could even say, that's not in line with what they say they are. But when you say, I don't deserve that, you're inflating your own status. What do you mean you don't deserve that? People do all kinds of mean stuff. Are you saying that you should never be a target of mean stuff? Other people can be? No, Dr. A, I say other people don't deserve it either. Well, that's a little different, though. If you say about your son that he doesn't deserve to be treated like that by his girlfriend, you're making a comment on your admiration for your son, I guess. But if you say, I don't deserve to be treated like that by her, you're essentially saying, I'm too good to be treated like that. No, I'm not saying that, Dr. Ray. I'm not saying that at all. I don't even think I'm good. No, but what you are saying is that what they did to me is something that, as a person, I don't warrant. Well, I don't doubt you don't warrant it, but they did it. And maybe it has nothing to do with you. Maybe it's who they are and how they act and how they think and the morals they follow and their personality. But when you say, I don't deserve it, you're taking it personal. Well, I know there are those of you who are listening to this going, I don't agree with that. I don't agree with what he's saying at all because I don't deserve it. I don't deserve to be criticized by my spouse like that because I don't do that to him or her. And I'm a nicer person. I agree it would be so much better if they didn't do that to you, and it would be easier to live with them if they didn't do that to you. No argument there. But to say, I don't deserve that, always runs the risk of saying, I'm too good to be treated that way. Just remember when you say it. Our Lord could have said it. And as far as we know, he didn't. I'm Dr. Ray.
Every year, couples who go on the Ave Maria Radio's Good News Cruise testify how their marriages are revitalized and transformed. When we said cabins are filling fast, we meant it. The 2025 cruise is sold out. But it's the Good News Cruise, not the Bad News Cruise. So the 2026 Good News Cruise is planned and taking orders. There'll be new special and surprise guests and familiar ones from Ave Maria Radio, as well as Father Michael Schmitz and Father Joe Krupp. Go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the travel tab to find out more.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
Have you ever been so grief-stricken and so heart-sick that you can't see God? You can't see God in the tragedy. You can't see God in that cross. You can't see God in that sin. Why? You're enveloped in that grief. You're enveloped in fear. And God is out the window. You don't see Him standing right next to you.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Are you paying high prices with a traditional health insurance company that pays for things that violate your conscience? There's an alternative available. Solidarity HealthShare is a community of faithful individuals and families that never share into immoral medical services, all while saving you money with prices starting as low as $85 per month for singles and $512 for families. Never fund another abortion with your healthcare dollars. Call 844-313-4999 to learn more.
Dr. Edgar Endy here. Program Doctor is in Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time, co-production EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and Ave Maria Radio Communications. My producer man and call editor from previous calls, Andrew Krutchek. I had a prof in college, and he maintained that we're the dominant species because we're able to use language. That's what makes us the dominant species, okay? And I remember thinking, okay, I can buy that. But I think there's one other thing that separates us from animals, especially dogs. I'm not afraid of a vacuum cleaner. My Rottweiler yesterday, I'm vacuuming. She attacks the vacuum cleaner. Now she listens to me. I say, Delta, stop! She listens. But she's attacking the vacuum cleaner. I don't know why. I mean, I told my wife, I said, I can't really be expected to vacuum anymore. No, I'm scared. If she's going to do that, honey, I can't vacuum. I tried. Let's go to a heavy one here from Sharon in Wisconsin. I'll let you hear it.
The question I have for you is when I was growing up with my siblings, unfortunately, I was molested by my older brother. I know it happened at least once, pretty sure it happened twice. I was very young. At the time, he told me that he also did this to my older sister. Fast forward 5 years later, he passed away. He was killed in an automobile accident. My sister and I never spoke of this because I don't know that she knows that it happened to me, but I certainly know that it happened to her. So my question to you is this. She has struggled her whole life with decisions, making very poor decisions. She's on her third marriage, just a number of things. And I know that she never dealt with this versus I did deal with it. I went to counseling when I was old enough to realize that I needed help with this, and I only once entrusted my very best friend, and I told her. I felt better about myself, and I'll be honest, I'm at peace with it. I forgave him, but I don't believe that she has ever accepted this or ever, she's just never grew from it. She's never dealt with it. I think I'm a little late. I probably should have called you 30 years ago, but I'll be honest. Now it's like I just want peace with myself. I guess I want to just tell her, hey, it's okay. It happened to me because there is a part of me that feels guilty about just.
How old were you, Sharon? Sharon, how old were you?
10.
Episode happened once or twice?
Yes, for sure once. I have very vivid memories where, when, et cetera. And she's 2.5 years older than me. And
does she know that? Does she know that you know about that for her?
No, no, no. I'm almost positive she does not. No, I think she's been carrying this around that it happened to her, and part of me feels like I just want to help her to say, listen, it happened to me too. There's nothing to be ashamed of, and I know that it hurts, but I'm struggling. And then my other question is, I'm afraid that she's going to tell the rest of my siblings, and I'll be honest, it won't be good. It won't tear a family apart, but it's not healthy.
So in other words, the rest of your siblings would have this evil sense toward your brother.
Absolutely.
Well, if you were to tell her, you could say something like, she doesn't know this happened to you too, right?
That's correct.
Okay. You could tell her, if you wish, that you had a couple of incidents, and this is how you dealt with them. And you wouldn't show any knowledge that the same thing happened to her. You could do that. Or if you think by telling her that, she'll then go tell other family members who will then, the memory of your brother would be awful and terrible. How old was he at the time?
Close to 17.
Oh, okay. I don't want to get into all the details here. Part of what happens is that when there's a traumatic incidents, oftentimes people think, okay, that's going to follow me the rest of my life. I'll never be right if I don't quote unquote come to grips with it. It will impact everything that I do. I don't know if that's the case with your sister. It may be that with or without those incidents, she may have struggled in life. Because of her personality, just other factors, her decisions she's made as an adult, all those things. So to assume that automatically she is the way she is because of those episodes once, twice, whatever, many times, is possibly a misassumption. So in that sense, maybe I can put your mind at ease in that the struggle she's had in life may or may not be related to that.
I understand.
I mean, if I were to ask you to recount for me your sister's history as a teenager, as a young adult, in her marriages or marriage, you'd say to me, well, she did this, she did that, she made this decision, she did this, this happened to her. You'd have this long list of ways that she self-sabotaged. Would that be safe to say?
Yes.
So given that, the temptation is to say it was because this happened when she was 12. I don't know. I can't gauge that. Although I can say this, I often see people who have had that kind of tragic incident as a child, and they've lived a bad life, and it's hard to know how much of it was related distinctly to that and how much of it was other factors in their life that they would have done anyway without that happening. So if you're going to say to yourself, I think my sister needs counseling, I think my sister needs to adjust to all of this. First of all, you know your sister, and if she would say no, not going to happen, then don't waste your breath. If she would say, Why do you think I need counseling? Would you say, well, you've run your life kind of bad, and I just thought you could work your way through some things. Would you say that? That's kind of rough. What would you say? It's coming down to the idea that you have made a direct link between what happened to her when she was 12 and the way she's lived for the next 50-some years. If Sharon were sitting in my office, I would probably explore the nature of the molestation. What was it? Was it touching? Was it something much, much, much more imposing, pressuring? I would want to know. And if someone says, molestation is molestation. Yes and no. Yes and no. I would also want to know if this is something, what has her brother done since then? Has he shown signs that that was an extremely bad teenage action, and that as far as she could tell, he's matured out of it, he's moralized out of it, he's a much more responsible human being, they have a relationship with him now, and it's very good. She said, I've forgiven him, which makes me wonder if they do have contact with him, or does he live in another state, and so they talk to him once every 9 months for whatever the reason. I don't know. There's so many unknowns here. But the key theme here, and it's very, very common, and it's especially more so common as we become a very psychologized society, which is we tend to look back at one incident or two incidents in childhood. It's not unusual for me to have a client tell me when I was 7 years old, my father or my mother gave me a whipping I'll never forget. And I think that that affects me even to this day. There's an ongoing interpretation of what that was. I'll ask, well, was your mother or your father a bad parent? No, they were a good, loving parent. It was just an incident where I did something and they just essentially got very intense in their punishment. What is it about that that you have continued to hold on to it? See, that's the key. These kinds of things can happen, and you have to hold on to them. You have to keep thinking of them, keep reinterpreting them, analyze them from every different angle, try to make a link between what happened then and what you're doing now. All of this stuff is a lot of complex, interwoven type of thinking and interpretation that goes into as we move through adulthood. I had a babysitter who one time taught me something when I was 7. This babysitter was 14. Now, it wasn't anything, it was inappropriate. Let's just put it that way. Okay, I look back on it and I thought, yeah, all right, what she do is wrong. And she went on to basically be just a very stable, upright person. And at one point she said, hey, look, I don't want to do this anymore. And I at 7 years old, I didn't think much of it. And I don't look back on it with any kind of intense, oh, boy. I hate her. Or, oh boy, that ruined me. Now, there were a lot of reasons that I did self-defeating stuff far more complex and intricate than that one episode where she taught me how to kiss, in which my wife said, well, apparently you didn't learn any lessons. I didn't like that. Now, that hurt me more. But given all that, again, there are those therapists who will teach a person to dwell on something like this rather than getting past it, moving past it. Dr. A, you don't understand. That's horrific. I'm not arguing. But what I'm saying is if you cling to the horrificness of it, in large part it could be the clinging that is causing the problem, maybe even more so than the actual event itself. Now, I know in our over-psychologized society, that sounds like heresy, but I think there's a lot of folks who would speculate that that's accurate. Not in all cases, but in some. I think I can take it a step further and say that most all of us have some kind of event in our lives. The death of a very close relative, or something that could be labeled traumatic, that indeed we've gotten past because we moved forward and we've healed, and especially those of us who are Christians with God's grace, as it sounds like Sharon did with her situation.
Living the Beatitudes with Father Bjorn.
Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. I Can't Get No Satisfaction is a popular song, but it could be a summary of our life on earth. In the book of Genesis, we hear that we're made in the image and likeness of God. That means that we can know the truth and we can choose to do good to others. We can love. It comes to fulfillment in the Sermon on the Mount where we hear these Beatitudes. It's the standard of the Christian life. Jesus tells us that if we hear what he says and do what he tells us to do, we will be like wise people who build our house on solid rock. But we make progress towards happiness and blessedness by our actions, and it starts with our interior disposition, what we want to choose. Do you and I hunger and thirst for those things that will lead us to happiness and to God? Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied.
For more about the Beatitudes, visit EWTNRC.com.
Believers who respond to God's word and become members of Christ's body become intimately united to him, the Catholic Catechism tells us. Through the sacraments, those who believe are intimately united with Christ in a very real and hidden way. The body's unity does not do away with the diversity of its members, who engage in a diversity of functions. The unity of the mystical body triumphs over all human divisions. There are no Jews, no Greeks, no slave, no free man. All are one in the body of Christ. Christ is the head of the body of the Church, the principle of creation and redemption. We are united with Christ in his Passover. All his members must strive to resemble him until Christ is formed in them. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Very nice to have you with me, Dr. Ray Garandy. This is The Doctor Is In. The variant of it is Look Back Friday. Let's go to Bob, who's making a comment. We've done a number of shows here regarding spanking and the research on spanking, which is not anywhere near as negative as many would have you believe. There's a lot of factors entering into it. And Bob weighed in.
I've got a dilemma. Once I listened to your monologue about the survey about spanking, I reflected upon my and my kids and grandkids, and I grew up with spanking, and you know, not by any means what more than I had, just once in a while pat in the butt. But anyway, I realized that our two children, as they were raising their seven grandkids, they each were so minimal that I don't even think my daughter once ever spanked their children. We would watch her putting her hands on their shoulders when they were throwing a off the charts fit, and my wife and I would be going, that kid needs a spanking. And she would look at the child and say, now what is it you want? And this kid is like screaming, and she's 3 inches from the little kid's face and is screaming, and then she's never raising her voice. She's saying, what is it you want? What is it you want? And we go home, and my wife and I would say, gee, I know what she really wanted was a spanking. But in the end, my question to you is, I don't know how I understand all seven kids have ended up being perfect. I mean, literally, not perfect, I shouldn't say, but 90%, and they have no repercussions. And we and my wife and I will be the first to tell you that we felt very aside of ourselves, thinking, man, all those years, we always criticized, but now, what can we say now, Dr. Ray, you know?
Well, there's a simple answer to this, Bob. People think because I say that the theories on all the evil that spanking does aren't borne out. They think I'm saying, therefore, you go spank your kid. I'm not saying any such thing. I'm saying this is a parental decision, and I don't like the fact that these guys coming out with theories, and guys meaning male, female, which is, boy, that's linguistic felony, that they are saying, this is what will happen to your child. Don't say we didn't warn you. Well, the research doesn't back that up at all. Now, to your particular question, How is it that it sounds like your son, your daughter has seven kids and they all turned out pretty good, and you're thinking to yourself, wow, they're practicing a very different brand of parenting than we did. And we're thinking to ourselves, these kids are going to be obnoxious little brats when they get older. And they weren't. They didn't. Well, there's a lot of explanations for that. First of all, what's the stability of the home? What is their parenting style? What kind of discipline did they use? What's the temperament of the kids? You know, some kids, they're brats when they're five, but by the time they're 11, they've outgrown it. That happens. Happens a lot.
Right.
So there's no simple saying that if you don't spank, your kids are going to be bad. If you do spank, your kids are going to be good. No, that's not true. Now,
well, I should add a caveat. They were raised in Catholic schools. I don't know what factor that would play, but I know that they had discipline in the schools. So both, you know, all seven of them did. So probably added a little bit.
Well, were their parents fairly solid disciplining type parents?
Yeah.
Okay, there's your answer. I wrote a book, Bob, called Back to the Family. I wrote it many, many, many years ago. The thesis of the book was, we're going to interview strong families in all 50 states. We're going to ask them about their parenting, about their family life. We're going to see what worked for these families who had these wonderful kids. Sounds like your grandchildren. We asked about spanking. 70% of the parents said yes. Yeah, there were times when we swatted bottoms. Maybe not all of our kids, but certain ones. 30% said no. No, we didn't believe in it. We didn't do it. Now, of those 30%, those kids turned out to be some of the finest young people that these teachers had ever seen. So it's not a straight line relationship. That is what gives you your confusion.
There is no parenting practice that gets more vitriol and assault, gets spanked, then spanking. A lady told me once she was new to the neighborhood and she joined a woman's group. She was talking about her history, her past life, and it was rocky. It was very, very rocky. And they were fascinated. Oh, they were asking questions about it, and they were empathetic and listening politely. Then when the topic came up, she had children, and she mentioned her kids' ages, and somehow it got around to, have you ever spanked? And she said, yes, I have. And she reported to me there was a collective gasp. All of the things that she did when she was younger, it was polite interest. Fascination, actually. But when she said she spanked her kids, she had committed the cardinal sin. I saw a survey. Now, again, the survey that was the way the question was phrased could really, really slant it. The question was, which is a greater, and I don't know the word they used. I think they used the word wrong. Which is worse? Which is worse? Hitting a child or an adulterous relationship? Overwhelmingly worse was hitting a child. Now, granted, you know, hitting a child doesn't really narrow it down. What kind of thing is this? Is it abuse? But I find it fascinating that they use the word hitting. But even at that, the majority thought an adulterous relationship, which could destroy a marriage, was not as bad. So it speaks to how awful and evil and terrible and vile swatting a bottom has now become in our culture. I don't know of any schools that still have paddling left. I mean, when I was consulting to the school, some of them still had paddling, but none of them do now. Not at all, not even remotely close. The experts have pretty much said this is in any way impermissible. And it's more than impermissible. It causes all kinds of psychological, social damages. And I've seen surveys that are scary. Things like 93% of all prison inmates report corporal punishment growing up. Yeah, And how many of them didn't have dads? And how many of them had horrible, turbulent environments? And how many of them were in gangs? And how many of them were in drugs? And how many of them did all kinds of things growing up in a very, very chaotic, if you want to even call it, home life? And oh, by the way, they also got hit. Probably out of control type hitting. So, see, that those kinds of things just shake people up. And they're pointed to as evidence that a calm parent who swats a bottom, particularly when a child's younger, is just as bad.
Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
That idea of suffering is one of the reasons many people either turn away from God or they ignore faith altogether, because they cannot comprehend or wrap their heads around suffering and all the suffering in the world. This is an issue for you, and it's an issue for all of us from time to time when we go through rough situations, to say, Lord, what do you want me to learn about suffering? Ask the Lord to help you understand the meaning of suffering. God doesn't waste his time with anything. Whatever you go through, he will use if you allow him to use it. And you look at the greatest evil, right? The killing of God, Jesus, the Son of God on the cross. And what came out of that? Our salvation.
Catholic Connections, Teresa Tomeo. Weekdays, 9 a.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Christ is the Answer with Father John Ricardo.
In the midst of our culture today, in this age of relativism, which wants to grant Jesus some significance, but not so much, so we'll give him wise man, great leader, inspiring preacher, great teacher, prophet. You don't get that option when you claim to be God. What reasons do we have to believe that he is who he said he is? And it's important, again, to employ the use of our reason and to understand that faith is not blind. My faith, and please God, the faith of everyone here, is not blind. It rests on something. It rests on a number of things, not least of which is my own experience of God, but it also has something substantial which can be claimed through history. We're not talking about a galaxy long, long ago, far, far away when we talk about Jesus. We're talking about a precise moment in history which has been testified to by countless testimonies, and you and I have access to them.
I decided that was wrong, what I was going to do. I was going to let the bumper music play the full 30 seconds. And let's see, we got 1, 2, 3, 4 bumpers, I think. And 30 seconds, that's 2 minutes. And let's see, the show is approximately 50 minutes long, give or take the time breaks. So 2 minutes, that's 25 times 2 minutes is 50 minutes. So I would have to do 5 weeks of programs, letting the bumper music play all the way out to get one free programming. Not having to say anything, just listening to the bumper music. I just said that's wrong. I'm just going to do 15 seconds. I'll come in at 15 seconds, so it'll take me almost over 2 months to get a free programming. But I think that's a fair compromise. This is Look Back Friday. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. Mary is calling from Missouri. She has a sister living with her mom. And let's see exactly what the turbulence is. How'd you get stuck with doing this dirty work?
I would like to ask myself. I asked myself that question. My husband asked myself that question. I don't know. I guess I'm the one that everybody feels they can talk to and everyone will listen to. But
not your mom.
God love her. Yeah, she shouldn't have to deal with this. She's elderly. We should be taking care of her.
But, how old's the sister that's living with her?
65.
Has she been there a long time?
Well, she's she was in one of my mom's homes, and then something happened, and she was, so I guess it had been about 4 years. And the idea was that she would help and fix it up and everything so that it could be,
that was the idea, huh?
Yes, right. But
whenever somebody says the idea was, it's like, okay, that didn't happen.
And I don't know that I really expected it to, but I figured that she would be able to at least use that freedom of having a roof over your head and no bills to pay to get herself in right with employment and self-worth and start to like build herself up and have, you know, going forward.
Has this sister had a long history of kind of a fragmented, unstable sort of life?
Yes.
So this is nothing new.
Yes.
And do you think that your mother feels obligated, maybe out of guilt, maybe feeling, where did I go wrong as a mother, to support her as best I can for as long as I can?
You know, I don't know that she feels obligated, but she feels like she's stuck in a rock and a hard place. Like, who else is going to do it? And then sometimes she just loves her so much, she's like, hey, I want to, you know, I'm going to do this for her because, you know, she needs it. She needs to. And then she'll be frustrated with, why isn't she doing anything to help herself? And so she's just kind of like me, where I don't know.
Your mom is trapped.
She is. And like I say, sometimes she's angry and sometimes she's in tears and sometimes, you know, everyone's telling me, you got to get her out of this other place. And I'm like, and then where does she go?
You talking to sister or mom?
Siblings.
Okay. So you got to get the sister out of there. She doesn't have a job, right? So mom's supporting her.
Right. Okay. Or she'll have a job, but it doesn't pay much, and it's now and then, and that kind of stuff.
And it's been a history like that. Like, it's been that way for, well, but she's 65, so it's been that way for 45 years.
Yeah, maybe 30, yeah.
Okay. Well, you want the good news? No, Mary, you want the bad news or you want the badder news?
I guess I'll take it all.
It sounds like the bad news is they expect you to work a miracle, that somehow you're going to convince your mom, you got to do something about this. This has gone nowhere, and this is making things worse. That's what you got to convince your mom of. I don't think that's going to happen, because I think your mom is, one, parenting out of a little smidgen of guilt. This kid hasn't lived well. Mary does. Mary lives very well. She's married, and she's got kids, and she's a sweetheart. And so Mary's life's gone good. But this other one, she just struggles. She's always struggling. She's had a lot of rough luck in her life. And, oh, gosh. So there's a little bit of that. But the bigger thing is the fear. The fear of, well, okay, now what? Where's she going to go?
Mm-hmm.
Now,
mm-hmm.
That's the bad news. The badder news is that your mom is either going to live with the misery of all this, or your sister is going to do something that forces your mom's hand. Whether it's, I don't know, using your mom's credit card, if she hasn't already done that. Yeah. Whether it's, did you just kind of nod yes?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I hate when I predict the future and it's the past.
Yeah. No. I mean, it was a one time, well, I don't know.
It's the one time that your mom told you about, because she isn't going to tell you five times because everybody's going to think.
No, I called her out on it because I see all the bills and I said.
So your mom didn't even call her out on it?
My mom never knew about it.
I called
her out on it and said, hey, something happened here and I'm wondering if I need to call and tell them there was fraud, or do you know about this?
So she did it behind your mother's back. It wasn't even permission from your mom. Okie dokie.
Yeah.
Maybe she deals on a cash basis now, you know? Tell your mom not to leave money laying around. Okay, you're saying I know again. Don't tell me I'm predicting
No, they're not in the same place, so that can't happen.
All right. So your mom's basically supporting her financially. Is that it?
Yeah, and all the rest of the family is frustrated and fed up with it. And I'm like, well, then we have to come up with a feasible game plan. Like, she wants to be paid for helping mom. And I'm like, I think getting a roof over your head is payment.
Well, and you're going to go. You have to go to your mom. Mary, you got to go to your mom. You're not going to get anywhere with your sister. You got to go to your mom. Not likely. Reasoning has a hard time overcoming potent emotion. I would ask mom, Mom, what do you think would happen if you said, I am not going to do this anymore and I'm going to slowly phase it all out over the next 2 months, giving our sister time to adjust and make her own way? Now, my guess would be mom would say, oh, I don't know. I don't know how she'll do. You know, we've tried that before and it didn't work. She always fell and she always kind of came back. Mom, are you absolutely afraid that if you finally put some limits here, that our sister is going to crash? Well, I worry about that. That could happen. I mean, it's happened before. Mom, are you saying then that no matter what is going on right now, you're going to continue to do that because the alternative is too scary? I don't know. See, when somebody says that, and they do say that a lot, what they're really saying is, I'm hoping something will change. I'd like to see something change. That's what they're hoping. It's like the parent with a 27-year-old still living in their basement. The one thing I've found that may move some people who are constricted by emotion and fear of what will happen to this adult is this. Do you think that the way it's going now is helping her or is hurting her? Well, I don't know what you mean. I think I'm helping her. You are helping her in terms of supporting her financially, but do you think that's helping her to be responsible and mature? Now, you're going to have to accept whatever answer you get. You can't argue with the answer you get. Your whole goal is to get the person to think about, am I helping or hurting? It's a question I pose to a lot of parents whose 19-year-old is living at home and is totally uncooperative, nasty, basically using the home as a base of operations, drifting, not acting responsibly. And when I ask, do you think that you are helping them by allowing this to go on or hurting them? Many have never even thought about the hurting aspect. They just view it as, I'm helping, and I'm helping as long as I can so something changes. But the longer it goes, the more you're feeding into this self-destructive behavior. That's what it is. The behavior that the child, now in this case a 65-year-old child, is doing is persisting in their undoing. Or at least they're limping along. If I were a betting man, most of these cases, nothing changes. Nothing changes until something really bad happens. Or a total misuse of the parents' funds by the young adult, or in this case, the older adult. Or violence. Or complete lack of cooperation. So, we'll see. I'm Dr. Ray.
When your children consider going to college, where are you going to find a place that will prepare them for the future and build on the foundation that you've laid? The answer? Ave Maria University. With an authentically Catholic curriculum, including 35 majors, AMU prepares students to take on the world.
My daughter told me she was published in a scientific journal as an undergrad. I'm so proud of her. The world needs Catholic physicists, and my daughter's going to be one of them.
Learn more at avemaria.edu. That's avemaria.edu.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Are you paying high prices with a traditional health insurance company that pays for things that violate your conscience? There's an alternative available. Solidarity HealthShare is a community of faithful individuals and families that never share into immoral medical services, all while saving you money with prices starting as low as $85 per month for singles and $512 for families. Never fund another abortion with your healthcare dollars. Call 844-313-4999 to learn more.
Do you have a teenager at home who's full of potential? Too often the world is telling you to be content with mediocrity instead of raising respectful and responsible young adults with strong character. Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Ray. If you need some help, not only to navigate those teen years, but to really enjoy them, check out my book, Standing Strong, Good Discipline Makes Great Teens, as well as my other books, on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net.
This program brought to you in part by the town of Ave Maria, Florida.
Ave Maria, a big kind of small town. A golf cart friendly, ride your bike everywhere kind of town with something for everyone. Resort style amenities, two golf courses, shopping, and dining in our town center. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at the core of the community and a wide range of homes to meet your family's needs. Visitors are welcome. More information can be found at avemaria.com. Ave Maria, a big kind of small town.
Thank you so much for joining me, Dr. Ray Guarini. Program Doctor is in Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. I want to make a couple more comments on this rather unusual scenario. Well, it's not as unusual as you think, but this daughter, who is 65, is definitely still at the behest and the financial support of the mom. Now, I'm going to assume the mom at the youngest is in her 80s somewhere, perhaps pushing 90. And our caller was nominated by the rest of her siblings, and I don't know how many siblings there are, sounds like there were several, to go to mom and try to get mom to understand that this 65-year-old daughter's taken a lot of advantage of her. The number one mindset of parents who recognize that an adult living with them, usually an adult child, and who's been there a while, and who's been very difficult to live with, uncooperative, disrespectful, following no rules, whatever. The mindset is, I could never live with myself if I set conditions and they had to leave because they didn't meet those conditions and something really bad happened. It torments them. It actually torments them. So they hope that the child, now I'm using the word child, it's an adult, comes to the realization, I don't want to live here anymore. Or even they meet someone of the opposite sex and move in with them. Or they get to the point where they don't like their parents. They're still misusing and mistreating their parents' goodwill, but they don't like their parents. Parents just they're nagging. And you know what I tell parents in situations like that? Oftentimes, I will say, quit trying through words to get this person to act cooperatively and responsibly. They're not doing it. It's been 4 years. They're not doing it. And whatever happens when you try is a fight, an argument. It gets ugly. And they'll admit that. They'll say, yes, I can't say anything. Then at this point, you have two options. One, you set the conditions and you give a timeline. Knowing that in the long run, that's probably the best for the young adult. It's probably the best. Or two, you let the child live there and you no longer comment upon how they're living. Their lack of a job, lack of responsibility, no longer comment. Or you could raise the rent, or you could stop supporting their smartphone and their car and whatever else you're supporting financially. You could do that. It works. Just a few ideas, more coming. I gotta go. Walk with God. Stay in His house forever.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRRay.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.